Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hello, welcome to Japanese. I'm your host, Akiko Padayama, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from a studio at Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And this show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi and sushi every day on the supermarket, but what is on beyond the sushi? We hear dashi ramen in izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, so I'll try to demystify it in this program with my cool guest. And my guest today is Kayla Copeland, the PR assistant at Ichiran Ramen, a unique ramen restaurant chain. And Kayla speaks bright and perfect Japanese, by the way. And also joined is Mr. Iori Hanai, the PR manager of Ichiran Ramen, so he might jump in as he wish. And So, ramen has become as popular as sushi in the U.S. lately, and Ichiran Ramen is particularly unique among hundreds of ramen shops for offering each customer a very private dining experience. So we'll talk about it in details in a moment. But before we start, Japanese is available on Heritage Radio Network as website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify and subscribe to Japanese. And please write a review. We appreciate your feedback. Also, if you have any ideas about the topics of the show or show guests, please let us know. You can email us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or akikokatayama.com. And also, I have a quick announcement. The 23rd Sumo Stew is coming to New York tonight, November 12th at 8 p.m. at Brooklyn Brewery in Williamsburg. And as you may know, Sumo Stew is a seasonal live streaming event of sumo matches straight from Japan, NHK, the national broadcasting company. And you can enjoy Japanese food from outstanding restaurants as you watch the matches. And actually, matches are very captivating, and it's kind of addictive too. And tickets are available at eventbrite.com and search for Sumo Stew. That's SUMOSTDEW, Sumo Stew. And also for Japanese listeners, there's a $10 discount code that is SS Japanese, one word, WS Japanese. Hope to see you there. And finally, Heritage Radio Network is holding a holiday party and tasting on Monday, December the 3rd at the Brooklyn Botanical Garden in New York. And there will be great food from popular New York City restaurants, including the great Kaiseki restaurant, Naoki Takahashi. Also, you can watch a soba making demonstration by a soba craftsman and chef Shuichi Kotani. And of course, you'll also find beautiful cocktails, wine, and Japanese sake. So for tickets, please go to eventbrite.com and search for Winter in the Garden 2. So that's Winter in the Garden number 2. And that is... okay, so I have another discount code for Japanese listeners. So enter the code at checkout, that's Japan Eats. This Japan Eats one word, for 10% discount. So I will see you there. Now let's start a conversation with Kayla Copeland. Hi Kayla, welcome to Japan Eats.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so first of all, I want to talk about your background. So where are you from, and what did you eat when you grew up?
I'm actually from Indiana. I just moved here 5 months ago from Indiana. I don't know how much you know about the Midwest, but there's not a lot going on as far as like food culture. Mm. There are only, that I can think of, two decent ramen places in Indiana.
Oh, two. Okay.
Yeah. Not a lot of Japanese culture there generally. But as far as what I ate when I was growing up, honestly, very simple things. My mother worked at night, so she didn't cook. And so it was just me and my father, and he didn't really cook a lot either because he worked a restaurant job, and the last thing he wants to do when he comes home is cook. So it was very simple things like hot dogs and like macaroni and cheese and things that really aren't that good for you, but are very stereotypically American.
They're not necessarily bad, but I'm sure you get the idea. Right. So, then you know, to get ready for this show, we exchanged an email, and you wrote perfectly Japanese. So it was very impressive. So you majored in Japanese at the Purdue University. Yes. So what led you to study Japanese?
It actually came, I think a lot of people start out with like anime or manga, but for me it was actually music. I heard a song by Utada Hikaru, and I was like, wow, she's amazing. And then I found out she was born in Manhattan, and I was like, whoa. And that was the first time I'd ever really been introduced to the concept of someone who is bilingual and sings. And I bought a Japanese album of hers, and I was like, wow, I love this, but I can't understand anything that she's saying. And I got really frustrated. And this was back in the day of like dial-up internet. So I just bought a dictionary and a grammar book and started teaching myself. And then the more I learned, I just kind of fell in love with it. And I was like, wow, I want to do this for the rest of my life.
Wow.
So then I was like, oh, I can major in it? That's what I'm going to do.
That's interesting. I heard you studied in Japan during your college education. So where did you study in Japan, and how was the experience?
I was at the University of Tsukuba for a year.
That's a great university.
A lot of people, well, it's funny because Japanese people know exactly what it is, and then American people are like, the what?
Because it's a very experimental, educational, highly high-level educational institution.
You can tell when you're there. It's a very new kind of place. It was awesome. I've never experienced the sense of safety and belonging that I've felt in Japan anywhere else. New York is close, but like, it's so safe. It's so clean. If you want to be alone, you can be alone. But if you want to go out with friends, it's welcome to. Like, it just, people seem to just keep to themselves and mind their own business a lot. And I like that because it's really not how it is in America.
Interesting. Right. So it's kind of the distance between other individuals.
Yeah. It's just like, in Japanese, there's a phrase like the gomeiwaku kakezuni. And like, you don't want to be a bother to other people. And that's how I was brought up. And so when I was introduced to that culture in Japan, I was like, oh, this is easy to adapt to because it's already how I grew up thinking. And so I just was like, oh, this is nice. Like, because other people are thinking the same thing. And so we all have like a similar common goal.
Right. Interesting. That gomeiwaku kakeshinai, that's like really fundamental mindset in Japan.
Yeah, I like that.
Right. So it's out of respect to other people, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so you work at the PR department of Vitrum, ISA, with Hanai-san. So we're going to talk about the Vitrum, but how do you get a job in the first place?
So I got really tired of Indiana. there weren't any opportunities for someone who speaks Japanese, really, except the automotive industry. And I tried it, and it was not very good. So I just started applying for jobs, just shooting out emails because I knew I was going to move out to Brooklyn. I had already talked to a friend about moving out. And so I was like, I just need to find a job. And I just started shooting out emails. And then there was a PR position. And I was like, this sounds interesting. But of course, it's through a recruiter, so they don't say who it is. And then the recruiter called me and was like, oh, yeah, I have this position open at Ichiran. And I was like, oh, I know what that is. It's on Johnson Avenue. I know where that is. I used to walk by all the time to go to Roberta's. She's like, yeah.
That's interesting. Wow, sounds like a destiny.
Yeah.
Right. But do you really decide to move to New York before you got a job?
So. Yeah, I just, yeah. I was like, I came here to visit some friends, and I realized, like, wow, this is just such a better place for someone like me. Mm. It's definitely not for everybody, but for someone who's in my field and also just, like, misses the city. I missed, you know, the 45-minute train ride to Tokyo, back when I was in Japan. So it was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, I don't want to be anywhere else in the United States.
Interesting. Well, you had a huge exposure to foreign culture in Japan, so that's another big thing. Mm. Right. Okay. So let's talk about Ichiran Ramen, which I find it very interesting. So the first Ichiran Ramen was founded in Fukuoka Prefecture, which is the capital of tonkotsu, or pork-based ramen. Right. And I heard that the Ichiran brand began in 1993, but the business, the family started originally in 1960?
Yes. It was actually... So it kind of gets into like Fukuoka and Hakata food culture. But there's a culture called yatai, which for people who don't know what that is, it's basically like if you think of like a food stall and like the small places that you can enter and sit down at tables.
Mm, it's like a bar counter on the street.
Yeah. And that's, it actually started as futaba ramen and it started as like a yatai. Mm. And then they decided to brand it in 1993. So the concept and everything has been around for a while, but then it became strongest and what it is today.
Interesting. But it's interesting that that kind of the original business continued and then the name changed as a brand.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. But for listeners who are not familiar, Fukuoka is the southern part of Japan in Kyushu. So it has very strong food culture. And also I heard whoever, you know, major corporation develop a certain brand or something, that's the, you know, the city they test out. So it's an irrelevant existence in Japan. Right. Okay. So so Ichiran has now has become a major ramen chain with multiple locations all over Japan, Hong Kong, Taiwan, and the US now.
Yes.
So it's like how many, like over 60?
There are 77 now.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
That's
so
fast.
There's one in Taiwan, two in Hong Kong, I believe, and then the two here in New York. And then everything else is Japan.
Right. So the first location in the U.S. opened here close to our studio in Bush, Brooklyn in October 2016. Mm-hmm. And you have a second in the Midtown Manhattan that opened in March 2018. So you guys are growing here in the U.S. too.
Yes.
Right. So Ichiran is known for the flavor concentration booth along with the quality of ramen. So what is the flavor concentration booth?
So the creator... basically, like you said, Fukuoka food culture is really strong, and tonkotsu ramen culture is also very strong there. But we were confident in the fact that we do it the best. And so the idea behind it is basically that you're sitting alone, and you don't have any outside distractions, not other people, and you know, not your cell phone, not work. And just concentrate on the flavor of the ramen, then you realize, like, oh, wow, this is extremely high quality, which it is. So that's exactly why it's named what it is. I think we casually call it, like, a solo dining booth, but the real name is the Aji Shuchu, the flavor concentration.
Right. Yeah, I understand that mentality and actual effect, because when I go to really good restaurant, like sushi counter, I want to be alone, because the moment I put the good piece of sushi in your mouth, I don't need any distraction. Let me just stay quiet for like a minute, literally 60 seconds.
Yeah, that's how I am with donuts.
Right, so you need a donut boost too. Right, so okay, and so maybe you can describe further, what's the purpose of being alone? So when you are, so let's see, how does the booth look like, the flavor concentration booth at Ichiran?
So I think anybody who grew up in an Asian culture, they're like, oh, it's like a cram school booth. And they're like, oh, I don't really like it. But it's basically just these two simple wooden walls. And then in front of you, there's this open space that the server uses to pass you the food, but it can be closed by a bamboo curtain. So it's actually, it's not so hostile. It's very warm, like it's very cozy. It's not contained. There's definitely a difference there, because like sometimes I feel contained at places, but this is definitely a cozy feeling. It's like, oh, I'm alone, but I'm enjoying this being alone. And the only things in the booth besides you are things to do with our ramen. So it's really just like, this is what we want you to do, please enjoy this ramen as it's meant to be.
Right. So nobody can talk to you, even including the servers?
Yeah, they basically only say what is necessary. Just like a lot of the servers even here know Japanese phrases. So like, shitsurei itashimasu, when they open and close the bamboo curtain. Like, goyukuri dozo, and
like, can you just translate for?
Yeah, so like, shitsurei itashimasu is like, excuse me, and then goyukuri dozo is like, please enjoy and take your time.
These are typical phrases that you hear in Japanese restaurants in Japan, especially. Yeah.
Like, they don't talk to you unless you want them to. You can ask them questions, but especially if this is not your first time coming, and they'll be like, is this your first time? You say nope. They're like, okay.
They'll leave you alone.
Yeah, they're like, just ring the bell when you need us.
And then it's interesting. Because you said at the beginning, earlier, like, you know, ごめんわくをかけする. Like, I'm not going to bother you. That kind of mindset actually is totally concentrated at the Atrans flavor concentration booth.
Yeah.
So that's the Japanese mindset.
Yeah, and yeah, it's extremely Japanese. I can't imagine that ever being born out of an American concept.
Right. And so dining style at the casual restaurant is pretty common in Japan, such as soba noodle shop at the train station, like tachigui, like standing eating. But Americans tend to like dining with other people. So how do you accommodate people who don't want to dine alone in, you know, in the group?
Right. So that's probably one of the biggest apprehensions that people have when coming to us, is like, oh, I don't know how I feel about, because we've definitely promoted in America that eating alone is like really like lonely. Like, ew, I don't want to do that. But like, eating in a group is super fun. It's always the best. Well, first of all, that's not always true. But if you do want to eat in a group, our walls actually fold in. The only place that they don't is Midtown, which tends to work out because it's mostly, like at lunchtime, it's a lot of people who work locally and they're in and out because they are on lunch break. But for example, at Brooklyn and our Japanese locations too, the walls have a little hinge in them and then you can unhook them and fold them in so you can talk to the people next to you more easily.
Right. That makes it easier for like a couple.
It's like sitting at a bar, basically.
That's nice. And then there's no distraction outside, you know, just the two people comfortably private. That's another benefit, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So so what is special about Ichiran's you know, the ramen besides the flavor concentration booth?
We're extremely picky. Like, to put it very simply, there's a lot of science that goes into our ramen. And like, there's science in any food, obviously. But the level of detail in which we go into our food is kind of insane, and it's like amazing. There are specialists who, for example, there is a person who does just the soup and they know only the soup, and that's, they do it the best because it's the only thing that they do.
That's a very Japanese craftsman mindset.
It is. Yeah, this is very, it's like perfectly Japanese.
It's like, you know, the sword maker, somebody does blade, somebody does handle only, and they're adjacent to
each
other.
That's exactly what it is. Right? Yeah.
Like 500 years, the two families doing the same, to walk each other. Oh,
yeah. And like, for example, we have the original spicy red sauce, the hiden no tare, that goes on top. There are only four people in the world who know how it's made.
Wow.
They never let all four of them travel like on the same plane together, because if it was like to crash or something, then like,
yeah,
they all die. Like, what do we do?
Right. I'm sure that they have a good insurance too.
Yeah. I hope so.
Wow. So for listeners who are not so familiar with tare, what is tare in ramen term?
Tare is basically, it's hard to translate. it's like a sauce, basically, is the easiest way to say it. And ours has like, when you look at it, it looks like seasoning mixed into a sauce. But it's an addition to the broth, because you have like the dashi and the soup and like some of the water coming from the noodles and also the oil and everything. And then tare is just an additional flavoring carrots and put onto it.
Right.
And so, ours happens to be spicy.
Right. So as a ramen chef, like for instance, I think that they're basically soy-based and miso-based and tonkotsu-based, which you do, at Richland specialize in. That's a three types of stock, that soup, right? And it is, that people say dashi, too. And the noodles. And also, you know, like the toppings of the pork, the things like that. And the important element I heard in ramen, tare is what you accentuate your own personality.
Yeah, that's to true, too. Yeah, it's definitely... like when you look at our ramen, I think it's the thing that stands out the most, actually, because it's just this, it's kind of like the red spot on the flag of Japan. It's like just this red dot in the center. It's really weird looking at our ramen without it, like people who don't order it, and then you just see it and you're like, something's missing.
Right. Yeah, it's a little bit, that's the essence of it. Right. I heard that you have over 30 different ingredients to make that tare, right? Akai hidden tare, like red secret tare. Yeah. Yeah, so that's great. You have to just, listeners, you have to taste it to know what it is. Right. And you know, we're talking about the tonkotsu soup, so can you maybe explain how special, I mean, what tonkotsu soup is, and also how special at Ichiran?
So tonkotsu is a pork bone broth. Ours is special amongst even tonkotsu. I feel like this is just like a personal opinion, but I feel like tonkotsu is the one that Americans tend to be the least familiar with, because I think a lot of places just put out miso and shoyu, because everybody knows miso for some reason, and shoyu, like, it's soy sauce,
right? And also quicker for restaurants to make.
Yeah, and so like when I tell people, oh yeah, like tonkotsu, like what's that? It's tonkotsu, like what's wrong with you? But, ours is special because if you've ever been to any place that sells tonkotsu, it has a bit of a stench to it. It's not terrible, but it's like definitely kind of pungent. But ours doesn't have that. The scientists who have worked on developing our soup have essentially eliminated it, and now you just smell like a good ramen smell.
So it's not the funky.
Right. It's like very, very pure smelling, which is so, it's so funny to describe a soup like that, but it is, like, it's so different.
I think a tonkotsu is special. It takes hours to make, but it's the bone essence of the bones that's called umami.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And see, and then we didn't get rid of the umami, we just got rid of the stench. And it's also a creamier, lighter tonkotsu than I think a lot of places have, because I hear a lot of people in reviews and just influencers and everything that say like, I cannot finish a bowl of ramen, and then I come back and it's empty, and they're like, oh, I got the kaedama and I ate the entire thing and I drank all of the broth. And I was like, yeah, same, because I can't finish a bowl of miso, like I can't eat the entire thing, but I can drink all of our broth. It's really good.
Right. That's important because sometimes, you know, it's really a heavy one. If I have ramen for lunch, I can't eat dinner sometimes. It's too heavy.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, that's important. And you can have it every week or every couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's not nearly as bad.
Yeah. And you mentioned the kaedama. What is kaedama?
So kaedama is a noodle refill. It comes from, again, like Hakata, Fukuoka food culture. Basically how it works is like when you're done eating, you typically would eat the noodles first. You'd finish those first and you have the leftover broth. And so the kaedama is like an extra serving of the noodles to put in that broth so that you can keep enjoying the soup longer. And it's actually a campaign that we've had going on for a little while where you can get coupons to get free kaedama. So it's like an extra serving of the noodles.
Right. That's interesting because kaedama is usually like, you know, another bowl of rice kind of thing to fill your stomach. But it's the medium to enjoy the soup longer. Yes. That's the idea.
Yeah, because like Hakata ramen means also that the noodles are thinner than normal ramen. So it can seem like less sometimes, even though it's like the same, basically the same amount, because they're thinner. That's why they developed the kaedama culture, is to accommodate to that.
So that thinness has more surface right? An oval mm-hmm. sort of compared to thick noodles.
So. Yeah, so it soaks up the soup really well. Mm. It complements it very well.
Right. And where do you get the noodles from?
We make them. Mm. And we are. That's why we're in where we, like, this part of Brooklyn is because we needed the space for the factory to make them. And it's the same in Japan. Everything's, we make it.
Mm.
And it's also all kinds of secret stuff that I don't know.
I don't know how many people know about the secrets. But
not very many.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and I saw your website, and it's amazing how you're obsessively cleaning a restaurant and the bathroom and everything. That's I like that, you know, kind of like obsessive cleanness and also ultimate pursuit of whatever you do.
Yeah.
So that sounds very Japanese.
It is.
Zen
that's why I like it, though.
Right. Okay, so let's take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about what's on the menu at Ichiran Ramen. So please stay with us. Today's program is brought to you by Korin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Korin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. Their knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan-Asian to American, and that is why they are located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Korin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Korin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit korin.com. Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats, broadcasting live from a studio in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Kayla Copeland, the PR assistant at Ichiran Ramen, a popular and very unique ramen restaurant chain. So what kind of ramen do you offer on the menu at Ichiran?
We have tonkotsu, and we have only tonkotsu ramen because we are a specialty shop. We will most likely never add another thing to the menu because we are a specialty.
Mm. So that's really reflect the traditional Japanese cultural, like, you know, mindset. You like, again, you specialize in something. So if you do tempura, you only do tempura. Mm-hmm. There's sushi. So I heard per person, Japanese people, Japan has more restaurants per person because everybody is specialized.
Yeah, that's not surprising at all.
Yeah. So, okay. So, but you have the sheet to fill for each customer. Mm-hmm. So what are the options?
So, though we only have one kind of ramen, and some people are like, oh, you only have one thing on the menu, that's so silly. It's actually not, because we have an order sheet that we developed so that you can customize the ramen to your liking, and you can customize pretty much everything about it. The level of, like, the soup stock, how rich you want it to be, the level of the oil, the garlic, whether you want the scallions or chashu, like the toppings generally, whether you want the spicy sauce, and also the noodles, the firmness of the noodles. For example, I think for people who aren't as experienced with using chopsticks, the soft tends to be easier to handle because it just folds into the chopsticks a little more easily. But the texture of the firm is probably the one that fits our ramen the best.
Mm. Right, and because you chew, maybe you tend to enjoy soup together longer.
Yeah,
right. And I don't mind splashing noodles on my face.
Right, and if you're sitting alone and you're isolated, like, what does it matter, right? But some people, you know, when they come together or they're still self-conscious and want to practice,
Right, but for good food, I don't care how I look, in my opinion. Yeah, but I was surprised. I was looking at, the sample, the sheet, and you have how thick the soup is, the three levels.
Right.
And the cotterido means, the how thick, the texture of the soup itself, right?
Yeah, like the oil level, how it affects it.
Right. And I think it's there 5 degrees of, the cotterido. Mm. That's pretty interesting to me. Right. And so what's the preference for the majority of people?
Well, actually, on our order sheet, if you look, we have like pre-circled options. And a lot of people go with that, actually. The biggest change that we see is that people will change the firmness to firm instead of medium.
Okay.
For the reasons that we just talked about, is like the texture fits the soup better, and also chewing them allows you to enjoy the flavor a little longer.
Oh, because servers suggest it, or they prefer...
people just like have figured it out on their own, I guess.
Like al dente Italian pasta kind of thing.
Yes, yes. Like, and I almost wonder if it's because I don't know about the Japanese audience. I only can speak from the New York and American side of things, but I almost wonder if it's because we're more used to growing up with like al dente pasta. And so that resembles it more. And so then we're like, oh, I like this better anyway because it's familiar. But it also, I would agree that it also soaks up the ramen, like the ramen, the noodles, they soak up the flavor of the broth so that you can get the full ramen flavor when you're chewing it.
Right. Right, without having soggy feeling. Right. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people fail to boil pasta and they suffer from soggy pasta too. So what are the customer demographics at Daitran in New York?
It actually depends on the store. So Midtown, because it's our location actually is right next to Koreatown. So we do have like a pretty large amount of Koreans. And we also have a large amount of like Japanese and Chinese tourists that come to that particular location as well. And then after that, it's kind of a mixed bag because it's tourists coming in. We're right in the heart of Midtown. Empire State is just a few blocks away. Brooklyn, it kind of just depends. It's mostly local, I would say. We've been trying to reach out more to, if you look at like East Bushwick, there's a large demographic of Hispanic people. And we're trying to reach out to them more because they're probably one of the least associated groups with ramen. And I mean, that's just, their food culture is different and it's great too. But they're just, it's a little harder to figure out how to market to them and get them to come in. But for the most part, it's just like the typical, like Williamsburg, Bushwick, like about college age, maybe college graduate age person coming in.
Right. Yeah, especially this Bushwick location is changing quickly and more foodies.
Yes.
And I mean, there's a Blue Bottle Coffee nearby.
Right.
And that really means that it's happening. Right. So, well, that's interesting though. Like, the Latin cuisine versus Japanese, or those, there may not be anything in common specifically, but I think the ramen is so appealing to Americans nationwide, regardless of race, because it's comfort food.
It is.
Right. So, it's probably the perception of, it's Japanese or not. So that's, I think, also changing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because I think a lot of the Mexican dishes that are like actual, not like Taco Bell, but like real Mexican dishes that I like would, I think, also be considered comfort food and also contain pork. So it's like there are similarities. They're just not very obvious.
Right. And also, I think even including the Midwest, which is not known for Japanese food culture, is it? But I know that fine dining chefs branch out to ramen restaurants, which is not uncommon.
Right.
So there is appeal. Ramen's really democratic food, I think. Yeah. So, okay. So what's the percentage of Seoul diners at H-Run New York?
Oh, it just, again, it kind of depends on the day, because some days we come in and like I'll be walking, because I work at the Brooklyn location, so I'll walk into the store part and like I would say it's like mostly solo diners sometimes, but then every once in a while you get a group of like 8 people who are just like they're on a tour together or they're just doing something.
They just pull down all those dividers.
Yeah, because yeah, like, they want to sit together. I'm like, oh my gosh, like do you know what, this place is actually a solo place, but like that's totally cool. Like you're welcome. But it's just really funny. It's like, wow. And then I would say in Midtown, it's most of the time no bigger than a party of 4.
Mm.
Most of the time during lunchtime, like I mentioned before, it's a lot of people on lunch break. So it's a lot of singles and or like 2 people together. Mm. But then at dinner time, that's when there are more tourists. But it's not like huge groups all the time. It's usually groups of 3 or 4.
Mm. Then I'm sure each booth people look at the phones and maybe take pictures of ramen.
Yeah, so and plus they bring their kids, and so it's like, what are you gonna do? Like,
right.
No, kid, you can't eat this.
Right. Okay. I heard there's a lot of things going on at H-Run. Like, for instance, you got the second grade children came to H-Run.
Yeah. Yeah, we recently had one of the nearby schools brought their Japanese class of second graders to come and just check us out. And oh, it was amazing. They function like a Japanese class. They get up and say like, "Ohayou gozaimasu."
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh my gosh, like my second year of Japanese, I was 20 years old and would have been like, in that kind of a situation, but they were, it was just so natural for them. And they
but
were,
I'm curious though, is that the class to study, you know, something about this country specifically? This week is Japan, so they,
no, it's like a Japanese language class.
Really?
Yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah, so they're like very, very well taught in like the culture for just second graders.
Well, it's a local,
yeah,
really public school.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was super interesting. And they were very, because like when you're 7 years old, you're curious about pretty much everything. So, and we have a lot of things to show them. And so they were just like, what, everything. And, and like, oh, you press this button to call the server. And like, their uniforms are so cool. And just like asking questions about everything. So it was really, really fun to see their reactions to it. It's like a completely different demographic than we ever really deal with.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah. I never imagined that kind of class exists in New York.
I'm so jealous.
Right, but did they like ramen?
Oh, yeah. They were like, this is so good. Can I have seconds?
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's just, I think, especially tonkotsu, it's kind of milky, you know, rich and creamy. Mm-hmm. So I understand you can just have a snack soup.
Yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Mm. Okay, so you might create a future ramen chef at the class.
Maybe. That would be really cool.
Right. So what else is going on? What is your plan?
So actually this weekend is Anime NYC. It's New York's largest anime convention.
Mm.
This is their second year for it, and they were extremely successful last year for their first year.
Mm.
There were over 20,000 attendees.
Wow. So you just show all those different kind of anime.
Mm-hmm. And we're actually going to be there with a couple of other Japanese restaurants and some other local Japanese companies. But we'll have a booth there, and we're doing like a little panel seminar about basically the stuff that we're talking about today, plus a little more detail about the ramen itself. Mm-hmm. That's this weekend.
Where is it?
It is at the Javits Center.
Okay.
So it's on West 34th. It's about as West 34th as you can get.
Right.
And then it's very close to our Midtown location, so after the con you can always come and get like the real thing.
Interesting. Well, by the way, you know, there are like very foodie comic books in Japanese about, you know, any kinds of food, including ramen.
Right.
But is there any anime about ramen?
So it's funny you should mention that, because there is actually a series that got, it's a manga that got an anime adaptation. It's the English title is Miss Koizumi Loves Ramen.
Mm.
And it's about just this girl who really likes ramen. She doesn't want anything to do with anybody else, But there's this one girl who's like really persistent to like hang out with her. Mm. And Koizumi-san is like, I don't really want to hang out with you. But she's like, no, we're going to hang out. And so she's like, all right, let's go. Let's go get ramen. She's like, oh, okay. And they end up at Ichiran.
Mm. Really? That's funny.
Because the solo booths.
Right. Yeah, no, I told
and
you.
And they're sitting on, because it's like, basically every seat is full except for like three, and none of the seats are together, so they're like on opposite sides, like opposite sides of the restaurant from each other, and it's hilarious. But that's the only one I've seen that has a specific reference back to us.
Okay. Right. But there should be more, right? It's such an interesting concept. Not just, you know, Ichiran, but the ramen itself, I think, is a really deeply culturally Japanese in many ways, from the way people make dashi, that's a craftsmanship, like, you know, Ichiran itself, like, it's like almost 60-year history. And yeah, I think if you go to Japan and any corner, it's like a, you know, deli or cafe, you find a ramen shop.
Yeah, they're everywhere. It's like, I think it's probably more mentioned than I realize. Personally, the series that I get into don't talk that much about food, but I know there are definitely some like slice of life genre series that get more into food, because you see like on the internet like pictures of anime food and they're like, oh, it looks so good, and then the show's the real thing and it's like, the real thing looks good too. Yeah, that's Japanese food, basically.
Right. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. By the way, you mentioned all those obsessed ramen eaters, right? And then sometimes when I have ramen guests, I do research and looking for comments on certain guests' ramen. And it's like so many blogs featuring, you know, like there's a calendar based, and this person went to like 30, you know, places in a week or something like that. It's ridiculously passionate.
Yeah.
So,
But that's also very Japanese. Like to dedicate yourself fully to something like that.
Yeah, I feel the mission. Yeah, you know those people, which I think it's good in a way. Right. Okay. So, and I heard you're planning to open another brunch.
We are. So, this upcoming January, as in 2019, we will be opening a third store in Times Square, which is very exciting. It's definitely going to be the biggest of the ones in New York, with two floors. And if you look at the decorations and stuff that we have it now, it's close to like back in Japan, but this one's going to be probably the most atmospherically themed around the original concept of the design, which was like 60s, 70s, like Showa era of Japan.
Excellent.
So it's looking really good so far.
Yeah, well, Showa, people have very nostalgic idea of Showa, right? It's like a classic, and we call it the iki, like chic. And that was the generation people slowly, deeply enjoying the culture.
Right.
Yeah, so, oh, that's great. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it when it's all done. Like, even just seeing what we've completed so far is really exciting. Because I feel that I don't think the average American knows what Showa era is. They're like, what? Like, they know, like, maybe the Meiji. They know the word, but they don't know what it means. And so it'll be an interesting way of not only showing them ramen culture, but also, like, this is also part of Japan, you know? So it's exciting.
Right. Yeah, Showa is such a, especially recently, people started to use it as a very beautiful era and symbolic of chic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't wait. You can educate people, not just about ramen, but also the Showa culture.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, how many seats is it going to be?
It's over 100.
Yeah, 100. Yeah, over 100.
Yeah, because it's two floors.
Right. Wow. Because I heard sometimes I'm walking on the street in the midtown or, you know, in the Manhattan, the tourists come to ask me, like, do you know if there's a ramen shop nearby? Like, oh, people come look for ramen. That's interesting.
That makes me so happy to hear that, actually.
Yeah, I think it's, well, culturally, sushi is expensive mostly. And also, or, you know, you can just go to supermarket and buy right. sushi. But ramen is something, it has to be served warm at perfect mm-hmm. temperature. And then also, you can make it by yourself. So, mm. yeah, so that's something. I mean, you can try to make it by yourself, but...
You can get the instant, like, you heat them up. It's not the same.
Right, yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, like, the instant ramen? Mm-hmm. And before you boil it, there's the crunchies, right?
Yeah.
And I sneakingly, like, snack on it. My mom says, don't do it. You're going to have a...
Please. I mean, we have the instant ramen packs too.
Okay.
You should just like get back in the habit, be like, look where I am now, mom. Just with the Ichi ramen box.
Yeah. I don't know if it's safe because it's so tasty, you know, like a rice cracker, but maybe I should do it, I guess.
They're thin, so maybe it's safe.
Okay. I can try that. All right. So that one is available online or at the store?
Both, actually. Mm. We just recently started doing online, but it's available in store as well.
Right. But you need the solo booth. You yeah. buy it.
You don't have make the solo yourself.
Booth, right? Right. Okay. So where can we find more information about Ichiran Ramen?
If you're privy to social media, we're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We also have a webpage. It's ichiranusa.com. Make sure it's ichiranusa. The ichiran.com is the Japanese one.
Mm.
You can find it and it'll link you back to ours, but specifically for New York, it's Ichiran USA.
Mm, great. By the way, though, I think the Japanese one has English page too.
It does. Right. The translations aren't as updated.
Mm.
And the interfacing is a little kind of wonky because it's okay. been translated. So it's a little smoother of an experience to use the Ichiran USA one.
You know, the even U.S. Ichiran USA site has detailed secrets mm-hmm. in English, too. Yeah. So I enjoyed reading it, too. So.
Thank you.
Right. Okay, so thank you so much for joining us today, Keira.
Thank you.
And Yori-san, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, so listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or at kikukatayama.com. And Japan Needs is live at 3 p.m. on Mondays and always available at heritageradionetwork.org, iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So our engineer today is Matt Patterson, and I'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.